Welcome to VFN Radio's Extra Hour, where we're keeping the conversation light. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me in the Extra Hour is Pat.
Hello.
The producer of VFN Radio, and Chris.
Hello.
Hopefully Chris is going to be sharing with us this awesome encounter with the Lord that's going to cause us all to sit on the edges of our seat. Also, I want to give a shout out again to all those who are shifting, who the Lord is shifting across the United States. We're seeing miracle after miracle, provision after provision, parting situations. Have your expectations high because the Lord's hand is upon you and the King will grant you all that you request.
Sure.
Stand strong and be bold, for the Lord thy God is with thee. You're listening to VFN Radio, Extra Hour, where we're keeping the conversation light. If you missed our first hour, you've got to catch our first hour. We're talking about what happened in Benghazi, how this whole thing is just coming unfolded, and it seems exactly what we were talking about prophetically, what we only knew in the spirit, and allegedly what had taken place there, that it is not good. It is not good what's taken place. And the fear of the Lord is so much more, including Catherine Coleman, a woman of God, one of God's generals. We got a chance to really talk about, and you can find out more about her also on the VFN Torch. We're going to be talking about the original Ten of the Nation in this extra hour, beginning that conversation again, talking about what does it mean to be a republic? What does it mean to be a federal union of states? And so much more, including the book of Ephesians. You're listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. Joining me is Pat.
Hello.
And Chris.
Hello.
Well, we are going to be starting to have this conversation again about the original intent of the nation. When God lays something out, when God gives favor to a people and a nation, that when we think about it, we had two world wars that we should not have won, but God gave us favor to win those wars. What they called George Washington's ragtag army, which was the men and women who were minutemen, basically, that you would work in the fields, but they called you, you would actually respond and be a soldier as well. So you would be working in your farm, and all of a sudden they call you, and you go and you serve, you know, so many years or whatever with George Washington. Beat the British? Come on.
Yeah, right.
They beat the British. You know, Great Britain. That was huge. And all of a sudden, they begin to pray and write out what they learned about their experiences and all the things, all the nations that they've studied and the forms of government that they studied. And they begin to write out, of course, the Declaration of Independence, declaring that we just have to declare our independence from you because of 27 different reasons, not just taxation without representation,
right,
but the representative government altogether. And being able to worship God freely, and there's so many 27 different things. But then they wrote out the Constitution, and they chose, at some point in the beginning, because you know a lot of people show up after things are going, and they operate as if things always were, not realizing somebody had to seek God and had to do the hard work to lay out the foundation that they're presently walking in, but they'll never go there. You know, they just want to be on the committee, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, whatever. And so prior to them doing this, they began to just theorize and talk back and forth in the newspapers and discuss what kind of, if we were going to have a particular type of government, what kind of government would it be? And kind of like covertly, they had like pen names in the paper. They would write, and they call it the Federalist Papers. And it's a really not interesting book. But but if you can read it, you know, I had a chance to read it. And it's so important because it explains the why behind the what. I mean, why they're doing what they're doing is they're discussing back and forth. So one of them would write in the paper, and then somebody would read that, and then they would write another article answering them in a way that they didn't realize they were having these conversations back
covert
and forth. Yes, exactly.
Cool.
In the paper. And so they call them the Federalist Papers. And we are a federal government. We are a federal government and we're a republic. But the form of government is a federal government. And that's defined as a federation. Also known as a federal state. It's a political entity characterized by a union of partially self-governed states and regions united by a central federal government. And that's so important, because when you say that we are a federation, that we're a federal government, that so often when you hear federal government, and you know, that's how I would always think too, that that means Washington, D.C. But a federal government means we're a federation, which means there's 50 states that are self-governing, and we're united in a central form of government, a federal government with a federation. And we're giving up what we're seeing right now. We're seeing people give up the mindset and forget that we're 50 individual states that are put together as a federation. Mm-hmm. And the Lord's really laid on my heart that we're going to lose our lines. We're going to lose our independent states if we don't begin to pay attention to God. God's just going to erase the lines, and they mean less and less today. I mean, you travel over from one state to the next state, there used to be dramatic changes. I mean, it's like things are going to be totally different. Mm-hmm. Every day that you're in one state, you could get married when you were 18, but another state, you could get married when you're 14 or something. And you get somebody else, you could drive a car when you're 12, but you get to the next state, you could drive a car only when you were 16. I mean, there's just, mm-hmm. because that's the way it was. And now what we have is that we have Washington, D.C., owning, and we're giving it to them because we don't know our original intent that it's a federation, it's a federal government, and that we all have a part to play. And so when you're thinking about America, think about your state. You know, I think Texas is really has this down. Mm-hmm. The Lone Star State, they fully understand that they are part of a federation, and everything they say, everything they do, they have the American flag, their state flag, flying by their American flag, and it means something to them. It's not just decoration.
Right.
And they expect loyalty to the state of Texas as much as they expect loyalty to the United States of America. And they have a state song that everybody, the children are taught in school. Everything that they're just taught about their state. Somebody says, well, that's just kind of un-American. No, it's actually very American because we're a federation. Mm-hmm. We are a 50 individual states who are part of a federation who are self-governed under our state constitutions. And we have a constitution of the United States of this federation of being together. So you need to discover and you know, pray about your leaders, pray for them, and begin to talk to people about your values. Do they even value your state anymore? Do you even know what the Constitution says about your state? Did you know that they did away with one particular amendment that gave you more power in your state than they actually took it away from the state? And when you hear them talk about the 10th Amendment, you know, when they're talking about the 10th Amendment, they're talking specifically about state power. Obviously, they didn't do away with the 10th Amendment, but it says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved for the state's responsibility or to the people. Let me say it again. This is the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the state's responsibility or to the people. And that's so important because we have the National Education Association that's taken over. They're making new laws that take away the responsibility of the state. Every state just keeps coughing up, you know, all their rights and all their, mm-hmm. We're leaving two things. We're leaving being a federation, a federal government, and we're also leaving being a republic, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And the problem with being a federation and a republic is, a republic form of government, is you have to be involved in it. Mm-hmm. You don't just take people's word for it, because this is government by the people and for the people. Our founding fathers realized that, hey, You know, if we're going to have a kind of government that's going to give people freedom, then you're going to have to be participating in this form of government. And we'll find out that a republic form of government is a representative form of government, which means you send representatives to represent you, but you make decisions. You tell the representatives what to do, and they go to your state government or they go to your federal government in Washington, D.C., and they do what you ask them to do. It's called representative government. That's why they have town hall meetings, not so they can look like politically appetizing or tell you sweet things. So you can actually ask them tough questions and get a peace within yourself about why they're doing what they're doing, and you can conversate with them. And but you see that we're leaving that. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about federal government, what that means is we're a federation of 50 states that have individual rule that decided to be a part of a federal government. So as long as the Constitution is not making any laws concerning the states, everything else that it doesn't talk about is the responsibility of the state. Mm-hmm. Well, why do we give education to the federal government? Why did we give education away? That should have been to the state. We're giving, and now they want, you know, healthcare. And I personally believe that, you know, if you've been in the healthcare system and you've seen how people are abusing it and how they're treating patients, I don't think it's going to be, I think it's going to be like the driver's license office, you know, we need something done, but we need to do something about it. But if you give it to the federal government, that means all the rights of the states. If they make a constitutional law and put it in the United States Constitution that the government shall provide healthcare, immediately you've lost all your state rights, even though you're a federation. If you give, and this is what's happened, the National Education Association, national, you know, they put it on a federal level now, and if they start writing in the Constitution about this, then you're going to lose the right to educate your children. You can, you know, homeschool, and when you see them taking case law about this German family who fled for religious persecution from Germany because they wanted to homeschool their kids, and the government came in and took their kids from them and said they were going to put them in the schools, and they fled to America for, and think about it, according to the original founding fathers, they could pick the state they wanted to go to. They did education the way they felt comfortable with, which to them was Christian homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And Eric Holder, the attorney general chosen by the president, was suing this, taking them to court. Yeah, they're actually taking them to court, saying that this is not religious persecution, that you don't have a right to homeschool.
All right.
And it's like, what do you know, according to the founding documents, this is a federation that's not for you to determine who's going to educate. That's for whatever 50 states would do. And that's why you hear people say, well, why would you want to close down the National Education Association? You want to unfederalize it. You want to pull it out of all that, and you just want to give it to you. You can't handle your own state. Mm-hmm. You can't. You got a governor. You got a Congress. You got a state senator, state House of Representatives. You got school boards. You can go yourself and get on the school board to determine how the money's going to be spent in your school district. And the original intent, that's their founding fathers' original intent, because they knew that the more centralized that there is power becomes centralized like that, the less freedom people are going to have. And we're seeing freedom being given up today because we're not wanting to do the work. We're not wanting to find out what's going on. Just tell me. It's like, don't you know? And we're a federal republic. We're a republic. When you think about it, when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, I pledge allegiance. People used to say it. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, for which it stands, right?
To the Republic.
That's exactly right. To the Republic. Isn't that something? And we don't even bother. What does that mean? What's a republic mean? Well, a republic is a form of government in which the country is considered a public matter. This is a public matter, not the private concerns or property of the rulers. Think about that. Where offices of the state are subsequent to direct or indirect elected or appointed rather than inherited. In other words, ain't no kings around here, you know, that's why they have the sunshine laws, and they have these you can't have these hidden meetings, and everything has to be done public. Because the public are the ones who are, the citizens are the one who's actually leading.
Right.
It's a government by the people and for the people. In modern times, a common simplified definition of a republic of government is where the head of the state is not a monarchy. Well, right now, we're just seeing things happen that seems very monarchish.
Yeah, very.
Where just when you hear things, statements saying, well, I'm just going to go around Congress. I can't get it around. I'm just going to go around Congress. First of all, you have to understand, Congress, they exist because the Constitution exists. And the very first article to the Constitution talks about Congress. It says all legislative powers, which means all lawmaking, herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. So when you hear Congress, you're talking about those folks on C-SPAN.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Senate, which is two senators for every state. Mm-hmm. And according to the Section 2 of Article 1 in the Constitution, one House of Representatives for every 33,000 citizens in your state, which is very important because if, for example, in the state of Florida, you have a large part of the population down in South Florida, and you have a smaller part of the population in North Florida. Because of that, quite often, South Florida will determine the leadership for Florida. It'll determine the direction of Florida. And it really doesn't matter what happens in North Florida because the largest part of the population is down south.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Well, if America was like that, if it wasn't a republic like it is, and then you would have a small part of the country determining the direction of the country. But it's representative government, which means they can't do that. Now, obviously, in the states, you know, that can happen. But understand, that's national elections where that happens. And I'm talking about how the southern part of Florida determines the northern part of Florida. Same thing in California or any populous area. New York City, I'm sure, determines the direction of New York quite often.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to national elections, that's kind of how it goes because of things that they've taken away from the states. And I believe it's the 16th Amendment. We weren't going to go there today. But so it's a representative government. So when you talk about representatives and you have three branches of government, this is so important. Listen, I mean, if you're going to lose it, at least know what you're going to lose. You know, if you don't want to know this, at least know what you're about to lose.
Right.
This beautiful thing called freedom. It's a representative form of government. So you have three branches of government. And this is written in the Constitution. When somebody says they want to do away with the Constitution, they're talking about doing away with what we're made up of. And the Constitution was written. Remember, we talked about the preamble, the things that were guaranteed. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, the people coming after us, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. So the Congress was established so that we can ensure justice and domestic tranquility. And so you have three branches of government. One of them is Congress, and they're the ones that make the laws. That's what they're supposed to do, is make the laws. Now, the executive branch, which would be the president, has equal power with Congress, but he's supposed to enforce the laws. He's not supposed to make the laws. If he wants a new law, he's supposed to go to Congress and lobby for a new law, and they begin to ponder this law and see if he's supposed to win a majority of the congressmen, the House of Representatives and the Senate. And that's why you see presidents on telephones talking to congressmen and talking to reps and talking to senators there. And then you have the judiciary branch. And the judiciary branch, the judges, the Supreme Court, they're supposed to make sure if things are brought to them, they're not supposed to be proactive. They're supposed to, things have to be brought to them where somebody files a complaint and they say, this law is not constitutional. Well, you can say that, but you have to prove that. And so you carry that before the Supreme Court justices, which has equal powers to the legislative branch, which is the Congress, and equal powers to the executive branch. And they can say, this is constitutional, this is not constitutional. And recently they said that the health care was not constitutional. They took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court didn't even go there. They just said it is constitutionally correct that that Congress can tax Americans. So they didn't discuss the health care. They just said it's a tax. And so Judge Roberts, for example, he just said it's a tax, and they're just not calling it a tax, but it's a tax.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a right to be able to do that. So they actually ruled the ability to tax us as constitutional. Jehoiakim, you got to check that out, by the way.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more about this and look at the original intent, because when you hear somebody in the executive branch talk who has equal powers to the legislative branch, the Congress, and is supposed to listen to that branch, say, we're going to go around you, you're going to find out in a minute what that means is they're not going around Congress, they're going around you, and you got to pay attention. You're listening to VFN Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Can a prison guard share his faith with inmates? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
I work for a correctional facility for the state of New York. I was wondering, some of the inmates come up to me a lot of times and they ask me different questions about my faith, being that they know that I'm a Christian. I was wondering if there's if I can get in trouble for sharing my faith with these inmates.
Well, I don't think you should. I mean, if there's someone, an inmate asks you in a conversation about your beliefs and your faith, I think the appropriate thing to do is to answer the question. I would first check with the Department of Corrections to see if they have guidelines. But I will say that most government employers recognize that your free speech rights, including your right to have conversations, unless there was a security issue reason why not to, that it would be protected. And that discussing your beliefs, especially as a Christian, and what it's meant in your life, would certainly be something that's appropriate.
Do you have questions about your religious liberties? Get straight answers from ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
You just really wouldn't think it's possible. I mean, how could this be? Why would anybody really want to harm us? Why would anybody want to reprogram the way we think? Why would anybody want to fundamentally transform our nation from its original founding fathers' intent as God, as our foundation? Why would anybody want to take over our children's lives? Well, the reason why is because they say a hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. When you train your children up in the way that you want them to go, that's how they'll go. God's called us to train our children in the way they should go. But let's just don't take our word for it. Let's look back at history and see what happened when they found out what Hitler was doing in the very same time with the church trying to de-Christianize a nation. And that's what's happening today in America. You're looking at in every corner, and every infeeding of news and media and presentation is to just remove God out of the public arena, to de-Christianize America. But it's just the sins of the past. Listen up.
In 2002, a Jewish law student uncovered a report from the Nuremberg trials in the 1940s. It was compiled by members of the OSS, an American spy agency in World War II. The report was called The Nazi Master Plan, The Persecution of the Christian Churches. And it laid out a step-by-step plan to de-Christianize Germany. Take over the churches from within, using party sympathizers. Discredit, jail, or kill Christian leaders. Re-indoctrinate the congregants. Give them a new faith in Germany's Third Reich.
So where were Germany's Christians in all of this? Most of them were too frightened to protest. But a small remnant of Christians did stand up against the Reich Church. A group of 3,000 Protestants, known as the Confessing Church, openly defied Hitler and paid the price.
Adolf Hitler said, "I'll make those damned parsons feel the power of the state in a way they'd never believed possible. If I ever have the slightest suspicion that they're getting dangerous, I will shoot the lot of them."
700 pastors from the Confessing Church were arrested. Many of them were murdered or sent to concentration camps.
There is such a thing as evil, and this man is evil. Hitler has no permanent loyalties. If you cross him, you'll die.
Understand that that is the ultimate goal of adversary Satan, is to steal, kill, and destroy. That actually happened. Removing the knowledge of the Jews and God's people from the land. Concentration camps. That was what the end result was. JJ, listen, we have to pay attention. Jews and Jesus, understand this. The church and the Jews won't end up well if we continue in this direction. De-Christianizing America? Well, we need to stand up like the Confessing Church did and say, no, no more. As for me and my house, as for me and my city, as for us and our nation, we will be one that acknowledges God. You're listening to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. Joining me is Pat and Chris. You know, we're talking about the original intent of America. We're going back and just kind of finding out what this is all about. When you think, you hear people talk about, you know, we're a democracy, we're a democracy, we're a democratic form of government. And the thing is that, yeah, we all vote, but it's a republic way of doing it. We're representative, we're a republic, we're a federal government, we're a federation, which is 50 states. And each of the states, by the way, you and probably don't even know it because they're not even, I don't think they're even teaching it anymore. Each of your state has an individual constitution. It has its own constitutional powers. That's why you have a governor. That's why you have a Congress and inside your state. But then you see a duplicate of that in regards to the federal government in Washington, D.C. That's happening because we're a federal government. We're a federation. And it's a republic form of government, which we have to participate in. But when you're hearing these three equal branches of government, where one particular branch of government begins to exert itself over the other branch, they're in violation of the Constitution. They just have to say, this is my opinion, this is my vote, this is how I think it should go. And the other two branches, you know, can say the same thing. And sometimes things just get stuck because the executive branch wants to go right and the legislative branch, the Congress, wants to go left. And remember, the Supreme Court doesn't even get involved unless there's a constitutional challenge. So they just have to sit back. And people say, we just need to break this lock. Well, not necessarily, because it's designed that way to prevent us from going off a cliff.
Yeah, supposed to.
Everybody's like, we just need movement. Not when we're going off a cliff here. Sometimes things need to be stopped. And so Congress is made up of your Senate and representatives. You have two senators from every state, and you have one representative for every 33,000 people in your state. So if you have 1 million people in your state, you have ever how many, divide that by 33,000, and that's how many reps you got. But if you have 33,000 people in your state, you only have one there. People say, well, that's just not fair because they don't have as many representatives. It's because they don't have as many people there. And if they want more representatives, have them go to another state that has more representatives there, because it's a government by and for the people. This is not about where states are ruling over states. This is not about one branch ruling over another. This is freedom for all. Mm-hmm. So people have equal representation in the decision-making process. So you go to the polls and you vote for who you want to represent you in your district for the federal government. And they go there in the House of Representatives, and your state has so many of them, and you live in one, and you vote for that person, whoever it is. It's still people. And so far, no Nephilim that I know is running yet. Anyway,
that we know of.
Well, there's this one particular one. Anyway, and so then that means you have somebody in Washington, D.C. representing you. Somebody whose ear you have, who is your representative. They are your representative government. So they're supposed to be your voice in Washington, D.C. And everybody in your state, every 33,000, you count the people out here, okay, it's 33,000, that's one rep. Another 33,000, which would be 66,000, they get two House representatives. And just keep on going. You're equally representative, which means this is so important because that means that you are represented in Washington, D.C. So when you criticize and you point at Washington, D.C. and say, what's their problem? You got to say, wait a minute. I put those people there. Either my action put them there by voting for them, or my inaction by not getting involved at all put them there, or I didn't even bother to research them. I just asked the buddy up the street, hey, who did you vote for? Like, you're actually determining who's going to lead your country based off of a hearsay over a water fountain at your workplace. In representative government, you have to actually get involved. You have to look at read their websites, call the people up, talk to them. And if they won't listen to you while they're running for office, guess what they're not going to do when they're in office?
Exactly.
You know, that would be only a fool would think that if they don't even talk to you when they want your vote, when they don't think they need it, they're not going to talk to you. And what we want to do is, as believers and Christians, we just want to ask them up front about their values. You know, what does it do? You value the founding fathers' constitution that was written over this country? Do you value the Declaration of Independence? Do you value the Bill of Rights? Do you value the First Amendment that says that the government can make no laws concerning the church, religion, and that we can gather without any government being involved in that? Do you have value the Second Amendment, which gives us all the guaranteed freedom in the context that everybody has a right to bear arms? The Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth, I'm like, on and on and on. And talk to them about these things. If they say, well, you know, that I don't think that's going to come up. I don't care what you're going to do. I want to know who you are. I want to know what you're made up of. And some people say, well, you should, that's like a national question. You shouldn't ask a local person that. No, I want to, you want to know what their DNA is. You want to know how you think, because, mm-hmm. you know, integrity and character, if you have somebody who has integrity and character, it's going to be the same no matter where they go. Mm-hmm. And I'm school board all the way to the president of the United States, that you should ask these type of questions. And somebody says, oh, you know, and you're talking to this particular person running for office who's going to represent you in Washington, D.C. Understand, picture yourself down the road complaining about what's happening in Washington, D.C. And see yourself today being able to eliminate those regrets today by investing a little time and seeing who's running for office. And talk to them. And talk to them before the primaries, and get involved in the primaries, because once the primaries happen, you pretty much have two or three candidates to choose from. That's it. But in the primaries, quite often, you may have 10 or 20 people that you can get to meet in some meet and get to know, because you're choosing who's going to represent you in the school board, who's going to be over your kids, who's going to be over your county, who's going to be over your police department, who's going to be over your sheriff's department, who's going to be over your state government, who's going to be over your federal government, the federation. And just because you like somebody and you vote for them doesn't mean they're going to make it. But before God, if you do this before God and you pray about it and you do your best, and you're wanting, you know, godly leadership, you're wanting people who believe in the founding documents of our country, that I truly believe God will reward that. Even if you don't win the vote, mm-hmm. you know, he sees your heart. You're wanting to do right. You didn't vote your pocketbook. You voted, you know, what is right before God and what's right before man.
Right.
And so you send these representatives to Washington, D.C., so you have this big thing called the Capitol. Remember, went to the Capitol,
yeah.
And I sat out. There was this thing years ago, that cartoon that would happen, and it was talking about the process of how a bill becomes a law. And as a matter of fact, find that for me, because I want that to be able to you to hear this, because this is what happens in Congress. It's a little cartoonish, but it helps you to understand that if you have an idea and you think there needs to be a law somewhere, then you talk to your representative, and the representative is the one that makes a bill. And this bill is taken to committee, and the committee, these other representatives begin to discuss it, and then they decide, hey, you know, let's go ahead and take this for a vote, and let's see if we can make this thing a law. And that's how it becomes a law. So that's what the legislature branch does. That's what Congress does. And the executive branch, which would be the president of the United States, he enforces the law. He enforces that law. So, or he can actually appeal the law or veto the law. And this is how things happen. This is what goes on. And we're trying to get an original intent of the nation, the original intent of America, because we are a federation. And I'm learning with you. I'm going back and relearning these things again, because if we're going to lose it, well, we just want to know what we're going to lose. But also, we can operate within the context, because we want to always, as Christians, we want to operate within the law. We want to be constitutionally correct. And we want to be biblically sound and humble before our God, and understand that God does not exist under some form of man's government. So we don't lift the Republic or the Federation over the kingdom of God. And so it trumps all of that in our hearts. And the kingdom of God is actually in our heart. It's not something we're trying to establish here on earth. It's not a papacy that we're trying to create in Rome with our own outside government. It's actually a government of God in our hearts. And so with that, So then that's your representative. So when you're seeing on C-SPAN, you think, I don't want to watch this boring stuff. Every now and then watch and see what your representative's doing. Every now and then watch. And I want you to listen. This is still about 30 seconds right here, but this is so important how it works. And it starts off, this little cartoon character is a bill. And it's the process of dealing with your representatives. It starts with you having a desire to do something, and it works its way to a law. And then we're going to talk more about this. Listen up.
Whew, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee, but I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will, but today I am still just a bill.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. When I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, you're right, there ought to be a law. Then he sat down and wrote me out and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill until they decide to make me a law. I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee, and I'll sit here and wait while a few key congressmen discuss and debate whether they should let me be a law. How I hope and pray that they will, but today I am still just a bill.
Listen to those congressmen arguing. Is all that discussion and debate about you?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. Most bills never even get this far. I hope they decide to report on me favorably, otherwise I may die.
Die?
Yeah, die in committee. Oh, but it looks like I'm going to live. Now I go to the House of Representatives and they vote on me.
If they vote yes, what happens?
Then I go to the Senate and the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and if they vote for me on Capitol Hill, well, then I'm off to the White House where I'll wait in a line with a lot of other bills for the president to sign, and if he signs me, then I'll be a law. How I hope and pray that he will, but today I am still just a bill.
You mean even if the whole Congress says you should be a law, the president can still say no?
Yes, that's called a veto. If the president vetoes me, I have to go back to Congress and they vote on me again, and by that time you're so
By that time, it's very unlikely that you become a law. It's not easy to become a law, is it?
No, but how I hope and pray that I will, but today I am still just a bill.
He signed your bill, now you're a law.
Oh, yes!
And so it just kind of is humorous, but that's how it works. Your representative, you tell, call your representative office and say, well, you know, I've called my representative office and he's never called me back or she's never called me back, or they just send me some standardized letter. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't feel bad about calling him and say, listen, I want him or her to call me because I have a situation here that I believe a law needs to happen. And I need him or her to write up a bill why it won't work. What the Constitution is unconstitutional is, you know, they need to explain to me why it is this way and have a conversation with them. Why? Because they're your representative. They're supposed to represent you. And it's getting to the point right now because everything's so digitized and you get these autoresponders and it's like, I don't need an autoresponder from somebody that needs to hear my heart over this matter.
Right.
And not just to uh-huh me, but we need to have a conversation where we come to understanding, even if it's the opposite. At least we have an understanding that it's the opposite.
Right.
So that means then the next year and the elections come up, then you can find somebody that better represents your values, and then their time is up, and then you find somebody else if there's enough people that agree with your value system right there. This is important, and because they're your representatives. Those, you're sending them there, your action or your inaction. Your unwillingness to get involved in choosing leaders and talking to them and reading. There's so many different ways to educate yourself on potential candidates now that you can talk to them, email them, you can read their websites. You just have to wait to find out and get their brochure or something, you know, but way back when, or a flyer, and then call them up. But now there's so many ways to educate yourself that you can really feel comfortable and, you know, as Christians, pray about, you know, who you're going to be and who you're going to has your value system and who you're going to, you know, be behind. But you can't just blame these people in Washington, D.C. Understand, you sent them there. You sent them there. Somebody says, well, I've never voted. You sent them there. You didn't vote.
Yeah, that's a vote.
That's a vote. A no vote, or no, not even registering to vote, or not even finding out what political platform that you want to be connected to. I mean, it takes effort to be in a republic. And we're going to talk more about this in a moment, because we're hearing things said today. It says, well, I'm just going to go around Congress. I'm just going to go around Congress. This is what this statement means. I'm just going to go around you. And no one's going to make this happen. I'm going to be like a monarchy here. Think about it. That's right. What's being said. We're going to talk more about this in a moment. You're listening to VFN Radio. We'll be right back after these messages. You know, when you think about the church, you know, and what the enemy has done, the mindset, the vocabulary, the first thing that God started doing with us is to recapture the vocabulary again of what God is actually saying. I mean, you can really mess things up by changing the meaning of words. You know, you could just change the meaning of it, and all of a sudden you've got things going in a different direction. And so we had to rediscover, you know, what is the church? And we found out that the church is not a building. You know, we like buildings. I got a couple of good friends that are buildings, you know, but the whole thing is that the church is people. You know, we're the building of God. That know ye not that Christ dwells in you. The hope of glory is inside of you. All these wonderful things that we talk about. But understanding this is that, you know, so when you begin to be the church and you're abiding with God and you're hearing him and you're operating in family, you know, you have brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers and the Lord and all this wonderful stuff. And it's just fun. You know, you just look for a time to go there. But you still have, you know, things you're dealing with. You're still in the same storm everybody else is in. You're still in the same nation. You're still in the same workplace. You know, so you're having these pains and these struggles you're going through, and it's difficult, but yet it's encouraging that we have this. But, you know, John, I could only imagine how hard it is for somebody right now. If you're listening to us today and you don't have that relationship, I mean, you love Jesus, you know, you're born again, but you're in this whole, I don't know, the best way I can describe it is tradition, where, you know, men's philosophies and concepts and programs, and but you're not in family. I mean, you can call things family. I mean, so many people call things family, but you know what family is. You don't have to call it family. It just is. And he's called us to be the family of God. And if you're going through all this same stuff that we're going through, but you're doing it outside of family, think about it. That's got to be horrific. I couldn't imagine. Well, actually, I could, because I remember what it was like when I was going through that without having what God has done with us today in regards to family. Yeah, I mean, you might have had somebody that's friended you on Facebook, but, you know, just friending somebody does not mean that they're a friend. I mean, you think about it. If you had I know this, John, remember when we went to help out with the hurricanes that happened in New Orleans?
Right.
And, you know, it was just horrific what happened, and still have scars today inside of our heart for what happened. It was so bad, couldn't fix it. And the crux of it really was in Waveland that was flattened, and then the waters, you know, busted in New Orleans and flooded. But, you know, the church didn't know each other, and they were scattered all over the place, and they couldn't find the church because there was no authentic family-type burdened relationship. So other parts of the church who didn't know the parts of the church come in and start helping everybody. The pastors left the church. They just left. The shepherds, they left, you know, and Jesus says that's a hireling. It's a hard thing. But I have empathy, though, for a leader of a traditional situation, because, you know, it goes both ways. You know, they don't have a relationship with you. You don't have a relationship with them. And the thing about family is you both have to invest.
That's right.
You know, but it's hard to do in that kind of setting. Well, I encourage you, if you haven't even thought about, you know, just walking out what God says in his word, that it's not foreign. It really is true. It's happening at the Vine Fellowship Network. It's actually happening. You can go to VFNfamily.org and find out more about it. It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you, that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation.
that stand with us prayerfully and financially. This is partner on a monthly basis to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation and this nation by God's grace to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving.
Welcome back to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. Joining me is Pat and Chris. We're talking about the government, the original intent of the nation and our founding fathers. And we're starting to hear, when we heard right there with, you know, how a bill becomes a law and your representatives and what happens with a committee and the House of Representatives has to vote for the bill to become a law. And then it goes from there to the Senate. And somebody says, well, why are you just duplicating stuff? Well, remember, we have a better understanding of how America feels about something in the House of Representatives because there's one representative for every 33,000 people in the House of Representatives. But in the Senate, there's only two senators per state. Mm-hmm. So when you had some things that happened, which I believe even the healthcare bill and stuff, it actually started in the state, the Senate. Well, you're looking at it, you know, it's easier to start something in the Senate than it is the House of Representatives. Because you got to get America to agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
To get, and you know what I'm saying? It's because you got representative government really there. And when big things happen, it is the head of the Speaker of the House who is like third in line for the presidency, not the Senate.
Right.
Because the president is not the, it's not the Senate, because the House of Representatives is a better sampling of the people. It's a good, and so. When you hear things like, because each of these branches of government are equal, you have the executive branch, which is the president, you have the congressional or legislative branch, which is Congress, and then you have judicial branch, that this whole bill that you came up with and you talked to your representative and they took it to Washington, D.C., and they voted for it, they took it to committee, they did all the discussions, they wrote it out the way they felt like it needs to be. And there's so many laws now being brought before. They said there's so many, this is what Pat Robinson says on CBN right now. There's so many laws being written right now and passing regulations, not through Congress, but through these regulations, that pretty much everybody's probably guilty of like 5 or 10 laws that don't even know even exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's like not good, by the way.
Right.
Sounds like Jehoiakim. Check it out, VFN TV. Equal powers means all these House of Representatives and all these senators can just work it out and finally decide that they want to make this thing a law. And if the president, the executive branch, if the president says, one man or woman, one executive branch, one president, with all those representatives, one for every 33,000 in your state, two for every state in the union, the federal union, can decide, I don't want this thing, and they can what's called veto it, and they'll literally stamp veto across the top of it, and they could say no. And some people say, well, that's not right. No, you have to understand, it's equal powers of government. The executive branch has the power just to say no to whatever Congress said.
Mm-hmm.
So his power is equal to Congress's power, which is important, because when you hear somebody says, I'm powerless, it's like, no, you have equal powers to Congress. You could just cancel any bill that comes over. But a lot of times people don't want to do that. Presidents don't want to do that because they don't want the reputation. They'd rather it die in committee. They'd rather it, you know, even though they're the one killing it through those different things. And but also if the president doesn't want to sign this thing and make it a law, because if he signs it, it becomes a law, then he can have it just sit on his desk for 10 days. This is how powerful the office executive branch is. If it just sits on his desk for 10 days, it automatically becomes a law. It's so powerful, because that's how powerful these equal powers of government are, these three branches of government. But when Congress says we're going to go around the president, we should be going, what are you talking about? And when the president says we're going to go around Congress, And we're not going to go, we're just, since Congress is not working with me, I'm just going to go around them. You can't go around the Congress. That's our representatives. That's who we sent there. And it's unconstitutional. But I have to tell you, when you see what's happening is we're looking at, from my experience, being a former community organizer, until I found out this is not a good thing to be, because I was asked to be it by actually a church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how to get power to do what you want when you're not in power. It's how to organize people to force them to begin to push their representatives and their Senate and their executive branch or whatever to push their agenda. It's like, you're in America. Why don't you just go vote for the person that you want that has your values? Why do you have to manipulate it?
All right.
Because it's unconstitutional what you want. You can't. And so when we have the president going to Israel, he brought in young people in college, and he spoke there. When he went to Cairo, he spoke to young people there. And in America, if you talk to the young people, they go, oh, yeah, he's got the young people, because he's organizing the young people to push against the Constitution instead of, you can't work, that's working around Congress. That's what that basically means, work around Congress. And it's like, that would be unconstitutional not to work with Congress, and it'd be unconstitutional for Congress not to work with the president. And if both of them are at a quagmire, if they're both stuck, they're just stuck. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing for government. It's designed to move really slow so monarchies can't form.
Right.
So tyranny can't happen. You know, all these things can't happen. It's supposed to be slow like that. And, the person who wants to just do away with the country is frustrated when they find that they can't make it happen, because it has to go through all these processes. But the one who actually wants to hold on to the country and keep the Constitution, and they're excited to the fact that this thing is slowed down by the process. Our founding fathers were inspired. They had to be inspired by God. When I think about the Declaration of Independence that they wrote and they signed in their particular Congress in July 4th, 1776, they say that when in the course of human events, when they're declaring their independence from the King of Great Britain, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands with which have connected them with another, and to assume among them the powers of the earth, the separate and equal stations to which the law of nature and of nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. And so they start listing the causes. But before they list them, they say, listen, this is how we feel. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And he goes on talking about this. Listen, we believe that our rights come from God. And so we're going to separate ourselves from the King of Great Britain, because we believe that these 27 rights, they list the Declaration of Independence, needs to happen for every individual. So you don't want to give up your freedom. Mm-hmm. You want to say, listen, this is a federal government. We are 50 individual states who are part of a federal government, a federation of states, that we talk to our neighbors, or maybe you decide yourself. You say, hey, I want to be a representative for my people in my district. That's a real good thing to do. And then you go run for office, and if they elect you, then you represent them well, and you come back and meet with them. And somebody says, well, I don't even talk to the people. I just go ahead and make decisions right off. It's like, no, you're actually a representative government. This is not a monarchy. Even if you're a school board, or you're county commissioner, or you're a sheriff or a police chief or a city councilman or governor or state representative or a national representative, you're a representative, which means you have to talk to the people you represent. If you don't like the people that you're representing, maybe you need to move somewhere else, because that's what's about 50 different states. And I could understand that. I couldn't imagine being in some districts and thinking, I can't represent you guys because I'm not going to be able to go that way. It's against my values. But then you can begin to preach the gospel as a Christian, change the heart of the people, and you'll find out they're going to want godly values when they know God. They're going to want those type of things. So understand, it takes effort. It takes energy to be involved. Yes, sometimes you have to watch C-SPAN. Sometimes you have to go, and don't be intimidated when your representative is there in your city. Don't be snuffed out by this feeling of like they're sitting in some big chair, some high bench. They're giving you 5 seconds to be able to share whatever, you know, have your thoughts together and understand the founding fathers meant for you to stand there and bring your petition to the government and say whatever you feel. That's mm-hmm. that's just what they meant. That's you're doing things right when you do that. And to hold your representatives, whether they're a president, whether they're a congressman, which is a senator or House of Representatives, whether a judge in your state or whatever, they hold them accountable to what they said they were going to do something they didn't. It's not wrong for you to say, listen, you said you were going to do this. And they may say, hey, this is where I'm going to go with this thing. Then you go, okay, well, I got it. Totally understand it. And then, you know, next time the elections come up, it's time for you to find a different representative. That person may still stay in, but you know, with your heart between you and God, that you can't pull the lever for somebody whose values are to take the lives of children in the womb, whose right. values are destroy marriage as God designed it to be, whose values are to do away with the United States Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. In your heart, we can begin, if we begin to take this viewpoint, this original intent viewpoint, which is the right viewpoint that our founding fathers had labored over intently, then possibly that with repentance before God and crying out for mercy, maybe he'll give us the country back. You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.